ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो 10-5 चैप्टर 26 टेक्स्ट नंबर 2 त्रिगुणत्वात् ऋषिर्वाच त्रिगुणत्वात् कर्तु श्रद्धया कर्मगतय पृथक्विधा सर्वा एव सर्वस्य तारतम्येन भवन्ति। ऋषिर्वाच द ग्रेट सेंट शुकदेव गोस्वामी सेड The great sage Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, in this material world, there are three kinds of activities, those in the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Because all people are influenced by the three modes of material nature, the results of their activities are also divided into three. One who acts in the mode of goodness is religious and happy. One who acts in passion achieves mixed misery and happiness. And one who acts under the influence of ignorance is always unhappy and lives like an animal. Because of the varying degrees to which living entities are influenced by the different modes of nature, the destinations are also of different varieties." Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this chapter entitled Description of Hellish Planets, it's very significant because it gives some idea about the kind of suffering which awaits the conditioned soul who rebels against the Lord's authority. Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Kaivalyam Narakayate Tridashapur Akashapushpayate. He says that entrance into Brahma Jyoti is also Narakayate, is hellish. But if you read the descriptions of Brahma Jyoti, Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Gita that Brahman is very peaceful with no activity. And here the descriptions of hellish planets describes in great detail how the conditioned souls are put into great suffering and misery. So why Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying Kaivalyam Narakayate? So his idea is that the conditioned soul has been put in this material world, which is like an oven. If you have a heating oven, you know, just like we have our pizza oven, so you put the pizza inside and control the temperature, then the item within gets heated up. So as soon as that crust has gone inside the oven, problem has begun. The heating has begun. The only difference is the degree to which you want to control. So maybe you may want to keep the temperature a little low, or you may want to keep the temperature medium, or the temperature high. But in any case, it is within the oven. Therefore, as long as the conditioned soul is not serving Krishna, the mind is absorbed in sense gratification, then the Lord directs Maya Devi to control the heat of suffering, Adidaivik, Adibhautik, Adhyatmik. The three pangs of miseries are injected into the conditioned soul and he experiences the heat. Therefore, maybe in the middle planetary systems, the heat may be a little less. In hellish planetary systems, the heat is much more. In Swargalokas, the heat is less. But nevertheless, this is an oven. And ultimately, we have to get out of this. And the whole idea is engage in service. So therefore, whether there is description of heavenly planets or description of hellish planets, Bhagavatam describes the whole range of different scenarios. There is description of opulence of heavenly planets. Then there is description of how Indra gets frustrated in heavenly planets. how some Apsara Indra is infatuated by leaves, the heavenly planets, goes to some other place, and Indra is chasing behind her and completely in distress and misery. So this shows that heavenly planets is also a place of misery. If someone cannot be convinced by such descriptions, then description of hellish planets is also there. Because sometimes we cannot understand the message subtle. We need something more gross, more ghastly, more horrible, more direct. And therefore, description of hellish planets is there, which also has the same message, that unless you serve Krishna, there is misery. And there is also description of the spiritual world, that is a place where you can engage in Krishna's eternal service. So Bhagavatam is divided into these two main sections. One, how you can be attracted towards Krishna by entering into the spiritual world. Positive attraction. And then there are descriptions of miseries and sufferings you go through if you try to avoid Krishna. So the description of hellish planets come in this second category. And therefore, more than the details of what goes on in this chapter, the principle has to be understood. And we should know that this description has been spoken to Maharaj Parikshit, who has not committed a single sin in his life, who is just awaiting his death in another 3 days. And there is no desire within his heart also to go and see the hellish planets. And he is someone who has seen Lord in the womb. And he has directly conquered over the personification of all sin, Kali. And therefore, it doesn't make any sense for Shukadeva Goswami, in one sense, to go on describing details of hellish planets. If you go to a travel agent and say, I want to book a ticket to London. And he says, you know, in Central Africa, the cannibals are very deadly. And if you go to one of these places, they'll catch you, bind you, and put you in hot oil. Said, I want a ticket to London. And you know, this place is full of man-eaters. And by the way, anyway you go there, you will not escape alive. Said, hello, I want to go to London. Give me a ticket to London. But you should still know the dangers in Africa. But I'm not interested to go there. Why are you describing to me all these details? So it appears that Maharaj Parikshit is anyway going to spiritual world. One full chapter describing the details of hellish planets. And generally you would describe it to someone who has particular relevance for it. But there is no way he is going to visit those places and he is not concerned with it. But still, Shukadeva Goswami is describing and Maharaj Parikshit is hearing submissively. Because our tendency is as soon as we find something irrelevant, we switch off. This is not for me, maybe for someone else. Nor did Parikshit Maharaj raise his hand and said, excuse me, I think we are wasting a lot of time. Let me remind you, only few more days are there, just let me absorb myself in Krishna. Rather than absorbing my mind in Krishna, you are asking me to absorb my mind in the descriptions of all of these horrible places and horrible people who are doing horrible things to those who have performed horrible activities. And therefore, this is not the appropriate moment for this. But Shukadeva Goswami is describing it. Why? Because the whole Bhagavatam is spoken not just for Maharaj Parikshit, but for all conditioned souls for all time to come. And Maharaj Parikshit is not a self-centered, self-infatuated conditioned soul simply concerned with his own selfish interests and his own destination, but is a selfless, compassionate Vaishnava who is willing to use himself as an instrument even at the time of death, simply so that this message can be relayed for the benefit of all conditioned souls for all time to come. That is a Vaishnava. More than being concerned about his own destination, he is concerned about how the conditioned souls can be delivered and whatever information they need to know Maharaj Parikshit is willing to use himself as an instrument for that. Therefore, this particular chapter is very significant because it describes these principles in great detail. It is described that as far as the conditioned soul is concerned, he is caught within this material world because of the influence of false ego. So now, the main thing which keeps the conditioned soul here is false ego. And false ego is that conception where the conditioned soul thinks I am in control. And this in Sanskrit, as the other day Radha Gopinath Prabhu was asking a question on dambha. Amanitvam adambhitvam. So what is this concept of dambha? So dambha means concealment, concealing or bluffing. So the conditioned soul, his entire experience within the material world is that of bluffing and concealing. Being 10,000 tip of a hair, he wants to conceal that and wants to play the role of God. Therefore, as long as he is within this consciousness, then he experiences hellish conditions. So therefore, the origin of concealment or bluffing is given in the fourth canto, that from adharma, irreligion, and mrisha, falsity, dambha, bluffing, and maya or cheating comes. And this leads to greed and cunning, which leads to anger and himsa, which leads to ultimately yatana and niraya. And niraya here is the hellish conditions. So ultimately it is adharma which is the beginning, and the end is entrance into hell. And adharma, irreligion, means turning your face away from Krishna's service. Yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahetuki apratihata savai pumsam paro dharmo. So as soon as we leave Krishna's service, immediately we enter into the realm of adharma. And adharma and falsity give birth to dambha, bluffing, and maya or cheating. So this bluffing and concealment is something which is very much inherent part of the conditioned soul. And so in the Bhagavad Gita also, in various places this word comes. In 16th chapter, Krishna describes divine and demoniac forces. Kama mashritya dushpuram dambha mana madanvita. So dambha refers to bluffing, and the demoniac persons, under the influence of lust, they want to pose themselves as enjoyers, dambha mana, and under the influence of false pride, they claim to be supreme enjoyers. Also in 16th chapter 17th verse, Atma sambhavita stabdha dambha mana yajante nama yagyeshche. Just to have some prestige, just to pose themselves as greatly advanced spiritualists, demoniac persons engaged in yagya. They are not interested in the result of yagya, that is pleasing Vishnu, but they are simply going through the rites. Why? For prestige. They are also taking up to a so-called spiritual process for prestige. Therefore, within the word spiritual, the word ritual also comes. So when we follow some process simply to increase prestige, that is also known as dambha. And in the fifth canto, different causes for going to hell is described. And one of the causes is described as dambha yagya. Performance of yagya simply to increase one's prestige. And when many, many animals are killed in this process, the person is going through that simply to increase his position within this material world. That is also called Dambha Yajna. And in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, when Krishna is describing to Uddhava, he describes how that this Dambha is a concept which may even enter into the hearts of practicing devotees, where a practicing devotee is more concerned with appearing saintly rather than being saintly. And therefore, this concealment is a major threat in the life of a sadhaka. Therefore, we are trying to practice Krishna consciousness. We started chanting Hare Krishna. We are hearing Bhagavatam, serving devotees. What is the goal of that? We want to become purified. We want to become purified and advance. And therefore, success means we become purified of false ego, and success means we become attracted to Krishna. Success in spiritual life or advancement in spiritual life is defined in terms of how much do I love Krishna? How much attached I am becoming to Krishna's holy name? And how much purified I am becoming from the influence of lust, greed, anger, etc. These are parameters in spiritual life to judge how much I am advancing. But when I do not go through this process properly, then I see that the purification is not sufficient. And when the purification is not sufficient, I have spent time trying to purify myself, but the results have not come. But according to one principle, because I have spent so much time, I should have the results by now, by regular logic. Because if I have spent 4 years in an engineering college or a medical school, I should have the degree by the end of 4 years. So if I have spent 10 years, 15 years, 20 years chanting Hare Krishna, I should have developed attraction for Krishna. I should have become purified of lust, anger. But just should have is not sufficient. More important is, what is the reality? And then, when we actually look into the heart and see that although we have spent time practicing the process of sadhana bhakti, but the purification is not sufficient and the attraction is not so overwhelming, then this concept of dambha creeps in, where I want to conceal the sense of personal failure and try to pose myself as more advanced than I am actually. So therefore, this concealment is concealing the sense of personal failure, and therefore we are unable to face the reality. I am unable to face the reality of where I am, and I am trying to cover it up. This concealment means I am really better than what I am actually at. And so we take shelter of mundane concepts to establish our superiority. And we try to quantify spiritual advancement. I try to quantify spiritual advancement by saying that because I have chanted so many rounds for so many years, I have spent 15 years, so that 15 number looks quite big, so I must be advanced. I have distributed so many books, so I must be advanced. I have given hundreds of lectures, so therefore I must be advanced. And in this way, we try to quantify spiritual advancement. Whereas bhakti is a completely free and independent process which depends on the Lord's reciprocation and mercy. So in this situation, we have to appreciate that we need help. We need help in facing the reality and becoming purified of the principle of being distracted in spiritual life. And this help comes in the shape of the devotee's association. So therefore, the only way to overcome this dambha or concealment is we have to be honest and straightforward in taking shelter of devotees and express our difficulty and seek help and shelter. And then the devotees will reciprocate, the great souls will reciprocate, and gradually we will see that we are advancing in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, this false ego is the major stumbling block. And when we become a servant of this false ego, hell is right here. We do not have to go to all those 29 hellish planets to go there. Although the description of those 29 hellish planets appears to be quite horrific and ghastly and reminds us of the horror movies we have seen before, it is just that it is just more dramatic. But as long as we keep this influence of false ego within, it is separating us from Krishna by separating us from other devotees' mercy, and we continue to experience the suffering. So this is a very, very important principle. So in the Ramayana, there is description that Hanumanji was beginning his journey, and it is described that when Hanumanji entered into Lanka, the first person he met was Lankini. So now we are trying to discuss how to deal with the false ego, how to tackle the influence of this dambha or concealment, which actually is a product of this false ego. So Hanumanji, when he entered into Lanka, Lankini was there. And it is described that as soon as Hanumanji saw Lankini, he was not affected. Lankini tried to stop him. But Hanumanji said, I'm going in anyway. Lankini said, you're a monkey and this is supposed to be a place of demons. What are you doing here? Go back to your forest from where you came. Hanumanji said, I have decided I will tour this whole of Lanka, and no matter what you say, I'm going to enter. So Lankini took her fist and tried to punch Hanumanji. Hanumanji also took his fist and punched her. And she fell off. And she came back crying to Hanumanji and said that many, many decades before, Brahmaji had given one benediction. And he had said, Yada tvam vanara kaschit vikramat vasham anayet. That when a vanara comes and with his parakram and with his valor, vikramat vasham controls you, defeats you, at that time, tada tadyarhi vigyayam rakshasam bhayam agata. That time Lanka will be defeated and the rakshasas must become very fearful. So this is a very, very important statement. So Brahmaji had made this prediction. Lanka can only be conquered when the Vanara comes. You, O Lankini, will only be conquered when the Vanara comes and Vikramat Vasham, and by his valor and power controls you and defeats you. So Lanka represents the body, and the conditioned soul is held captive by the influence of the conditioned mind, Ravana. And Lankini represents false ego. And the false ego is the first principle which stops the representative of the Lord who's carrying the Lord's words and message and instructions, Hanumanji, from entering. So when we have false ego, we do not allow good instructions to enter. Even when our well-wishers are telling us, this is not good for you, this is not good for your spiritual life, this is not good for Krishna consciousness, this is not what you should be doing, but the Lankini of false ego just stops. Stop. Shut up. Don't tell me anything. You're telling me after I have spent 10-15 years in this movement, what I should be doing? So therefore, this Lankini is the major stumbling block. And this is a very, very important principle. So at that time, what can conquer Lankini? Vanara. So Vanara means monkey. Why monkey is called Vanara? Because monkey looks very much like a human being. So Nara means human being. When you look at a monkey, first you think it is a monkey. And then you think maybe it is a human being. So Nara and Va means or. Va means or. So when you look at a monkey, you are wondering, is it a monkey, an animal, or is it a human being? So that question comes. Who is this identity? So therefore the word Va is added to Nara. So Vanara means an animal who looks like a human being. Who resembles a human being is called Vanara. But the same concept can be turned around and applied to someone who is a divine personality, who is a representative of God. So here, the word Vanara, when it applies to Hanumanji, refers to Sakshat Dharitvena Samasta Shastrai, the Guru, the Acharya, the Lord's devotee, who appears to be an ordinary human being, Nara. But actually he is divinely empowered by the Supreme Lord. And therefore, he is also known as Vanara. So therefore, Vanara means not only an animal who looks like a human being, he also means a spiritual personality who is empowered by the Supreme Lord himself, who appears to be like a human being. So this is the double meaning for Vanara. So therefore, Vikramat Vasham Anayet, only such a divinely empowered spiritual preceptor can control Lankini. That means only the guru can subdue the false ego. And then, when the false ego is defeated, then the message can enter inside. The messenger can enter inside and deliver the message to Sita Devi, who is held captive by the conditioned mind Ravan. So this principle is very important, that we are totally dependent on the mercy of the spiritual master and his representatives. Because this Guru Tattva means those who are carrying the instructions of Guru. How submissive are we to those instructions? How much are we allowing ourselves to be controlled by those instructions? Prabhupada was asking one disciple, whom he did not see in the temple for a long time. Prabhupada said, "Where were you?" And he said, "I was traveling." He said, "With whom were you traveling?" He said, "I was traveling alone." He said, "But why you did not come to the temple?" He said, "Because traveling and preaching is very good, and rolling stone gathers no moss." Prabhupada said, "Now sit here and gather some moss. Because if you just keep traveling like this, you will ultimately be lost. You need the association of devotees, and you need to sit and hear from the devotees also." Prabhupada asked Jayadvait Maharaj about one devotee, "Where is so and so?" He said, "He's in the printing press." Prabhupada said, "Class is going on, why is he in the printing press?" He said, "Because he has a busy schedule." So Prabhupada said, "Close down the printing press. What is the use of having a printing press if he cannot come, sit, and hear the instructions which are being spoken?" Therefore, to sit in the association of devotees and hear the instructions is very important. And the instructions come from various personalities at various levels. But we should have the maturity to understand that they are representing the Supreme Lord himself. So this is a very important principle, that here was Hanumanji and he appeared to be an animal. He appeared to be a human being, but actually the representative of the Lord may appear to be ordinary, but we should take his instructions very seriously. And his own representatives may also appear to be ordinary, but it is up to us. How we take to this process seriously, we will also take those instructions seriously. Therefore, this principle will help us overcome the principle of false ego. Srila Prabhupada was at one time in Kumbh Mela, and it was Ekadashi. And Srila Prabhupada was talking to some devotees. Now, just before this, Srila Prabhupada was talking to one of his disciples, and this disciple came and told Prabhupada that he had just gone to astrologer to understand his future. So Prabhupada said that there is no need to go to astrologer, because ultimately I am giving you whatever knowledge you need, and getting spiritual instructions is sufficient. And most of them are interested in women and money anyway. But this devotee was still not so convinced. Some very famous astrologer had come, he went and saw him, and he came back. And Prabhupada said, "Where were you?" And he said, "I had gone to this astrologer." Prabhupada said, "I have given you instruction not to go, still why did you go?" He said, "You know, I didn't want to go, but, you know, this devotee who was with me, he was pushing me to go. And because he was pushing me to go, I had to go." So Prabhupada said, "If he pushes you off a hill and tells you to jump off the hill, then all you do it? No, you use your discrimination. Therefore, when I am telling you not to do something, why are you contradicting this?" Therefore, one of the biggest dangers in spiritual life is not to take instructions and warnings seriously, and still put faith in one's own discrimination. And if we continue this, over a period of time, we will see that our spiritual progress will become retarded. And therefore, vanara means someone who appears to be ordinary, but he is carrying the message of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he must be respected and given that kind of a proper feeling and reciprocation when we accept instructions from him and apply it in our own lives. So this is a very, very important principle. In the Gita, Krishna describes, Arjuna is asking Krishna, "Jayasi chet karmanasya mata buddhir janardana, tat kim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi keshava." Your instructions are confusing me. Krishna, speak to me very clearly. So here, the word Keshava is used. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Keshava means, Ka means Brahma, Isha means Shiva. One who controls Brahma and Shiva is Keshava. So Arjuna is telling Krishna, just like you control Brahma and Shiva, you control me also with your instructions. Therefore, do not give vague instructions. Give clear instructions on what I should be doing. And so, it is described that Arjuna had surrendered once in the second chapter. Shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapannam. I am a soul surrendered to you. Instruct me. But the process of surrender is a dynamic and continuous process. And we have to keep reiterating our desire to receive instruction. We have to keep expressing our desire to be controlled. And only then the reciprocation will be there. So therefore Arjuna is saying that I do not know why you are speaking confusing words. It seems you are not convinced that I am your disciple and I want to be controlled by your instructions. You are Keshava, you control Brahma, you control Shiva. Why don't you control a disciple like me? Accept me and control me with your instructions. So Arjuna is pleading with Krishna. Therefore, the instructions of the Lord's representative, they control our lives in a way by which gradually we forget our misconception of being the controller and allow Krishna's mercy to control our lives. And then gradually we can overcome this dambha or misconception of trying to conceal and be honest about it. So this is so critical. Srila Prabhupada gives an example that many times the principle of surrender may appear to be difficult, but just like a small child, he finds it impossible to post a letter into a post box. But he goes to a father and father lifts the child and the child can immediately put the letter in. It is so easy. So like that, when we keep trying and aspiring to receive the Lord's mercy and his devotee's mercy, the devotees pick us up. And then it is possible for us to practically do that which may have appeared to be impossible. That is the power of the blessings of the Lord's devotees. There is a nice pastime that Srila Prabhupada was at Kumbh Mela. And here, it was Ekadashi day, and Prabhupada was just making a comment to his other disciples that on Ekadashi, lotus pots fried in ghee, very delicious. So one devotee went to get that. And suddenly one Ramanandi Brahman came along with his son. He offered obeisances to Prabhupada and kept his bag in front of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada picked up what was within the bag and then showed to other devotees. It was lotus pods fried in ghee, and this Brahman had brought. And it was just a coincidence. And Prabhupada asked this Brahman, "So, how have you come here?" And this Ramanandi Brahman, he said, "I worship Gaurnithya deities, and I thought I will come here to take your darshan." So Prabhupada said, "Have you taken bath in the Sangam, Kumbh Mela?" So the Brahman, from within his bag, took out a thali, and he placed the thali under Prabhupada's lotus feet, and took out a pot of water and started pouring the water on Prabhupada's lotus feet and said, "This is the real Sangam. This is the place where all the holy places reside. And therefore, when this Sangam is there, I don't need the other Sangam." And Prabhupada was very pleased with his humility. And after he washed Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet and had the Charanamrit, Prabhupada looked at the boy. And Prabhupada said, "This boy seems very good. What are your plans for the boy?" Prabhupada would never give up a chance for preaching. And especially after this person had expressed so much of devotion to Prabhupada, that this is Sangam and everything. So this man said, "I want to train him in Sanskrit." Prabhupada said, "Why don't you give the boy to me? I will take care of his training." And this man said, "Swamiji, this boy is yours only. You can take him anytime." Prabhupada said, "Any time means no time. Right now." Many people in India will say, "Any time is yours only." But that day will never come. Give him right now. And he said, "But he is only a small boy. I need to train him in Sanskrit." Prabhupada said, "Don't worry. We will take care of his training in Sanskrit. We will do everything you want. You just leave the boy." But this man was not willing to hear. And he said, "He's only a boy and he's so naughty, he does so many other activities, he'll only be a disturbance to you. Once he's well trained, then in future, I will bring him to you." So Prabhupada didn't push the matter further. Many years later, devotees were in Kumbh Mela. And there was this big Mela of all the Ramanandis camp. And the devotees saw that one very young, prominent sannyasi was sitting there. And they found out that this young sannyasi had managed to do what no other Ramanandi sannyasi had managed to do, bring together 20 different sects of the Ramanandi Sampradaya, which were all fighting with each other for a long time. So these devotees went, and as soon as the sannyasi, young sannyasi, saw the devotees, he got down from his vyasasana and went and offered obeisances to the devotee. And the devotees were surprised, and he said, "Do you remember me? I was that small boy. My father had brought me to meet Srila Prabhupada. And I took darshan of Srila Prabhupada, took the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, and by Prabhupada's blessings and mercy, I got a chance to study all the Bhakti Shastras. And I prayed to Srila Prabhupada for his mercy, and now by his mercy, for 7 years I've been trying to bring all of these Ramanandis together, and at last, by his divine grace, this has become possible. So therefore, the first part of my mission is over, and that is bringing together all of these warring factions. And that has been possible only by the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada gave those blessings, and my father accepted those blessings, and I was there with my father. I also was recipient of that blessings. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada's blessings, they act beyond so many generations. And when the blessings are there, then something most impossible and unthought of becomes possible and easy. That is the power of blessings of great souls. On the other hand, if someone is rebellious and is not willing to reciprocate and receive, then he becomes cut off from the channel of the blessings. The blessings is flowing, but the false ego acts as a barrier or the dam and doesn't allow that to flow within. Just like one disciple had opened one restaurant in Hawaii. And when Prabhupada was in Hawaii, the devotees told Prabhupada that this disciple is now claiming that the restaurant is his own property. And Prabhupada said, "How can he do that? The restaurant belongs to temple." But he said, "But because he started the restaurant, now he is claiming that restaurant is his." So Prabhupada called his disciple and said, "So, you are whose disciple?" And he said, "I am your disciple, Prabhupada." "Okay, so whatever comes to you, you should offer to whom?" He said, "I should offer to you, Srila Prabhupada." "So everything which belongs to you belongs to whom?" "It belongs to you, Prabhupada." "So to whom the restaurant belongs?" "To me." And Prabhupada, he was quite astounded to see this. So he said, "Okay, take this and be happy." And he consulted the other devotees and said, "What should we do?" And some of the devotees were saying, "We should sue him. We should do this, we should do that." And Prabhupada said, "No, we will leave him at this because he's infected by this false ego. But in due course of time, he will become purified. It is a family matter, and therefore let us try to resolve it within. Let us cooperate." So Prabhupada had to deal with so many different situations where someone whom he was training was also coming up with this disease and infection of false ego manifesting completely. And Prabhupada had to deal with that. Therefore, this false ego, or the principle of trying to be the separate enjoyer, the separate controller, is something which leads to the concept of dambha or bluffing. So as soon as we open our hearts, immediately the mercy flows, the instruction flows, and the purification begins. And the only thing which Srila Prabhupada would see in a prospective disciple was his enthusiasm. And Prabhupada would define genius as the inspiration within. Genius in Greek means the inspiration within. So all of us have a certain kind of inspiration within that just needs to be kindled. And Prabhupada would do that when he would see someone was enthusiastic. He didn't care whether someone was qualified, someone had money, educational qualification, expertise. All these are secondary. The most important principle in spiritual life is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm to hear, enthusiasm to be submissive, enthusiasm to serve. And when Srila Prabhupada would see that, he would take it seriously and immediately engage that person. And one devotee was expressing how he had no qualification of any sort. He was not organized, highly disorganized, and he was not highly educated. He was a school dropout. But one thing he had was he was enthusiastic to please Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had given one statement that I want to have a traveling Sankirtan bus and we'll travel all over the world. And in the initial days, so this devotee was enthusiastic. So he went and requested some hippies to donate one old bus. So there was an old, totally broken down, green colored bus with no window shield, with no front shield, none of the parts working properly, and not even a seat within. And that was given as donation. And because he was enthusiastic, he just thought that this is a wonderful donation which has come, and we can begin our traveling Sankirtan. So he invited Srila Prabhupada. And he didn't have a seat even to offer to Prabhupada, because there was only one seat, the driver's seat. So one chair was brought, and two devotees held the chair sitting on the ground, and Prabhupada sat on that. And Prabhupada was wondering, what kind of a seat is this? And what kind of a bus is this? There was no number plate, no registration, nothing. And there was no glass also in front, because he had just got that donation. And the driver who sat, the devotee, switched on the ignition. And when he switched on the ignition, smoke started coming out of the dashboard. And Prabhupada commented, this looks like an Indian bus. And the devotee, in his enthusiasm, he connected that Prabhupada is from India. So anything from India is good. So Prabhupada is glorifying this bus. He thought Prabhupada is very happy with my wonderful donation and is glorifying this. And he was feeling ecstatic that Prabhupada has accepted my offering. He has given his comment, this is like an Indian bus. That means it is great. But at that time he didn't realize what Prabhupada meant. And Prabhupada also didn't directly say anything. Prabhupada just said, I think a better idea would be to sell this bus, get some money, and use that in our preaching. That would be a better idea. And he just did that. And later, when he came to India, he realized what Prabhupada meant by Indian bus. And then he understood that actually at that time, Prabhupada did not make any comment, but he just saw the spark of enthusiasm. And he saw that and decided to engage this person in Krishna's service. And therefore, the real challenge is that initial spark is there. But over a period of time, we have to maintain that. What really changed our life is that submissiveness in the beginning. But in due course of time, when we forget that submissiveness and resort to dambha or bluffing, then we will again start experiencing the same kind of hellish suffering which we experienced before coming to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, this is a very important principle, and we can learn from the example of Hanumanji that because he entered into Lanka and he is known as Vanara, representative of Guru, he could conquer over false ego. And this is the only way we can control and defeat our false ego in our Krishna consciousness. When we are always submissive and eager to hear from devotees, and we should not just be waiting for the Guru to appear, right? Because there is no end to it. And when we are not submissive, we start saying, okay, I will only hear what Prabhupada says. And you go one step further, I will only hear what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says. I will only hear when Rupa Goswami comes and says. I will only come when Lord Chaitanya comes and dances in front of me. So there is no end to that. So therefore the challenge is to be able to hear and understand the message of the Lord coming from even the most ordinary devotees, taking his words seriously as to how my life can change and transform for the better in Krishna consciousness. And then face the reality that yes, I may not be as spiritually advanced as I think I am, and therefore I need help. And when we do that, then in this very life we can experience complete transformation. Otherwise, we will be put in hellish situation even while practicing Krishna consciousness, because it is after all the influence of false ego which creates the experience of hell. So therefore, this chapter called The Description of Hellish Planets is very important, because it describes the extreme of what can possibly and potentially happen if we reject Krishna. But we don't really have to go into those extremes. We are not looking forward to that. But we can just do the needful in our own life in Krishna consciousness. Any questions? Yeah? Premnidhi Prabhu?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah?
You are mentioning that how the biggest danger is when we have faith in our own discrimination, and how initially we might be submissive and then later on we have faith in our own discrimination. So that is dumbha. I was just thinking that as we are progressing in our spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, sometimes a need might arise to be assertive. Like, for example, you want to surrender and you want to do some services in a particular way. So I wanted to know, is being assertive also a part of being honest? Or is it that, because there is a danger, when you are assertive, you might become independent and you may deviate. On the other hand, if you are not assertive to get certain things done, then is it that, you know, you might get a little confused and kind of frustrated within? So how can is it good to be assertive, first of all? If yes, what are the pitfalls and what we should not do? And if no, then, you know, why not? So I just wanted to...
We can always present what we feel to our spiritual authorities or those who are more experienced or whom we feel have the required adhikar to guide us. And expressing what we feel is not bad. But after having expressed what we feel like, we should be willing to also hear what they finally say. So this kind of referring back to an authority is not bad, because even Arjuna was doing that. So when Arjuna got some doubt, he would refer back to Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj was getting some doubt, he was referring to Shukadeva Goswami. Like that. So many devotees, while serving Srila Prabhupada, they would also ask Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada told one devotee, go and start life membership. And he was in Indore. And he is from Germany and he didn't know anything Hindi. And he told Prabhupada, I don't know Hindi. Prabhupada said, you don't need to know Hindi. You just go and start life membership. Again he came back and told Prabhupada, I don't know what is life membership. I don't know who is a life member. I don't know what is this concept. Prabhupada said, you just enroll them, ask them to become member. They pay so much money and they get such facilities. And you just give them some books and they become member. 2 weeks passed, nothing happened. Again Prabhupada said, did you start? He said, no Srila Prabhupada, I'm still thinking, how can I go without knowing the language? And Prabhupada just became so heavy that I'm telling you, you just go and do it. And deep within he felt, I just can't do it. It is useless. Because what will I tell them? But still he went. And then the first merchant he met, he took a translator with him. And he told the translator, this is what you tell him. And the translator, he started speaking. And as the translator was still speaking, this merchant took out his checkbook, wrote down 1111, gave it, and also offered full obeisances to this devotee. And he got bewildered. My God, he didn't even complete. And before he completed, the check was there. He went to the second person, same thing happened. Third person, same thing happened. And he thought, this is fantastic. He came back and reported to Srila Prabhupada. I met three people, all three people became members. And Prabhupada said, when the instruction is given, the empowerment also comes. Therefore, you should have faith in this and not put faith in your own abilities or disabilities. So therefore, he realized that as long as I was on the mental platform, I just couldn't think, how can I do it? How can I do it? And therefore, when you're on that platform, you can never do anything. So you have to refer back. If you refer back and still you're insisted upon, you should do what is expected. If you do that, then the power also comes. That's very important. And that power comes when we actually chant Hare Krishna with attention and hear in the association of devotees. So the morning sadhana is like the fuel which we carry. And that fuel gives us the power to follow and put any instruction in practice. Prabhupada said, he made a comment, so and some devotee was not present in Guru Puja. And Prabhupada said, simply by attending Guru Puja, God brothers can resolve conflicts among themselves. Prabhupada said that. Right? So that was a very inspirational statement. So therefore, when we chant Hare Krishna with attention, it is our individual responsibility to beg for Krishna's mercy. Because as we progress in spiritual life, more and more people start coming, then we start delegating so many responsibilities. Okay, you do this service, you do this book distribution, you serve prasad, you do offer aarti, you do this, you do that. But there is one thing you cannot delegate. You are chanting 16 rounds. You chant 4 rounds for me. You chant 2 rounds. I see you are chanting very well. You chant 5 rounds for me. Have you chanted? Yeah, I have delegated all my chanting. That you can't do. That you have to do on your own. So therefore, when we do this sadhana, and along with the instruction, and meditate on how to perform this activity, then gradually, things are revealed. Things are revealed gradually. So therefore, as soon as the instruction is given, you should know that the service is already successful. It is there. Only time is separating us from realizing it. So when we become instrument, then we can realize like that. Okay? But if you keep arguing again and again, then it becomes very difficult for the person also to give instruction like that. Would like to make any comment, Govinda Prabhu? So, we would like to stop here. It's 9:30. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, thy good Premanande.